Our study is continuing in the fifth chapter of Judges. We're in the midst of this song that Deborah has composed and is now being sung that gives praise to God as a result of his giving them the victory over this Canaanite king Jabin and his captain Sisera and their mighty hosts. We're ready to begin at the 12th verse. And in this 12th verse, it says, "Awake, awake, Deborah. Awake, awake, utter a song." Now this is calling Deborah to action, calling Deborah to take notice of the fact that something is to be done now to give God praise and glory and honor. Something is to be done in return to God. She's to take note. She is to awake. And of course, she's going to utter a song. And then the same thing is said to Barak. And what's Barak to do? "Arise, Barak, and lead thy captivity captive, thou son of Abinoam." Now that the battle has been won, now that they have victory and freedom from this oppressive force, Barak is to lead the captivity captive. This probably includes that great number of people who were not actively involved in the fighting in the army, who were not actually the soldiers that were killed by the sword, but nevertheless they were aligned with, they were a part of the rest of the Canaanites, and so they were made captive. And so Barak is to lead thy captivity captive, that is, he is to demonstrate that they are captives. He's to lead them in a captive state. He's to not let them off without having any kind of reprisal for the fact that they had been co-workers with the oppressors these years. And so that's the way Barak is to show and demonstrate that God has given them the victory. "Lead thy captivity captive." So Deborah would utter the song, Barak would be leading the captivity captive, and then these would in turn then be giving God the glory and the credit and the honor for having given them this victory. Then, verse 13, "Then he made him that remaineth have dominion over the nobles among the people." Now we're going to have several verses here that will name those that helped in this battle and defeat of Jabin, and it will name those that refused to help, and it will name those that remain neutral. And there will be comments about them that are very interesting so that we can see what the mind of the Lord is regarding those that did assist and those that did not assist. So this 13th verse says that he made them that remaineth have dominion over the nobles among the people. Israel had been reduced in all probability to a smaller nation, a smaller number, a smaller effective number than ordinarily they would have by this great oppression of this Canaanite king. And so it was those that remaineth that were made to have the dominion. That is the remnant. Now God always has a remnant. And it seems that many, many times that all God has is a remnant. The church seems, even in this day and age, to be more of a remnant than to be a mighty moving force. During the Dark Ages, whenever the apostate church was reigning so supremely, the church was a remnant. During the time of the captivity, God's people were a remnant. Those who went back to the land of Canaan to repossess the land were a remnant. So this, the idea of having a remnant is a very common one. But God made him that remaineth. He made this remnant, this inferior number, to have dominion over the nobles among the people. And so, as long as God has one person that is his person, that is faithful to him, then he has a remnant, and he can take that one person and work mighty things among the enemies of the church. We each today may consider that we are a remnant, and we are one of the remnant that are faithful to God. And so God depends upon us. We have a great job to do because there are not mighty, mighty numbers out doing the will of God, but we have simply a remnant carrying on for him. But in this case, he made him that remaineth, that is, he made the remnant, have dominion over the nobles among the people. So this is a part of the song now, part of the praise given to God for the great feat that he accomplished by giving his people the victory over Jabin and Sisera. "The Lord made me have dominion over the mighty." Now, this seems to refer directly to Deborah. Deborah being a woman. A woman that is generally considered to be a member of the inferior sex. Not considered to be one made to have dominion over the mighty. Not considered to be one a part of a mighty army conquering the enemies of the nation. But yet, Deborah did this. The Lord made me have dominion over the mighty. He took Deborah. She was brought to the heights of being the judge of Israel. She was a prophetess. She assisted Barak in the things that he did. She was right there with him. He refused to go without her. And so then she had a very large part in the conquering of this foe. The Lord made me have dominion over the mighty. Verse 14. Out of Ephraim was there a root of them against Amalek. Now this seems that Ephraim also definitely entered into this battle. Ephraim assisted. And that the Amalekites were also enemies to the people. They had assisted Moab in their conquering of the nation, and now they seem to be assisting these Canaanite people and Jabin, their king. And so Ephraim then took up the stand against Amalek and seemed to be effective there. There was a root of them against Amalek. After thee, Benjamin, among thy people. Now Benjamin also assisted, and it seems that Benjamin led the way. Benjamin was even further south of the battle area than Ephraim was, but Benjamin seemed to have led the way, and so Ephraim came after Benjamin. After the example of Benjamin of entering into this conflict, then Ephraim also was after them. So we have credit and honor given to Benjamin as being among those that assisted in this battle. After thee, Benjamin, among thy people. Out of Machir came down governors. Now, Machir refers to the half-tribe of Manasseh that was on the east side of the Jordan River. And so they sent their governors. That is, they sent those that were of high rank, those that had some positions of authority in the tribe. They came to enter into this battle. And they entered into the fray. They became soldiers. They offered their skills and their services. Maybe they were able to offer some of the planning, some of the strategy. It seems that this nation, since it was on the border, this tribe of Manasseh never lost its ability to wage war and to have the craftiness and the cunningness and the planning that went with being able to successfully wage a military campaign. So they sent over their governors, their men of ability, to assist in this. And out of Zebulun, they then handled the pen of the writer. Now, of course, Zebulun was one of the major tribes here. Zebulun and Naphtali were among the ones that sent the very most into this battle. But from Zebulun, we learn that they that handled the pen of the writer, the scholars, the learned people came. And so they offered their services. And so they were able to provide whatever might have been needed by this army in the way of scholarly skills, whether it had to do with keeping inventory, buying supplies, or distributing rations, food, weapons, whatever an army might need along these lines. Then we have these from Zebulun who were able to handle the pen of the writer. Verse 15, we also learn that Issachar was involved in this, and the princes of Issachar were with Deborah. Even Issachar and also Barak, he was sent on foot into the valley. So they were with Deborah, assisted her in whatever she might need. The princes of Issachar, these would be the high people of the land. And also they were with Barak. And he was sent on foot into the valley. That is, Barak went with his foot soldiers into the valley. They were not a mounted army. They were not a army that was using the chariots. They were on foot. They were foot soldiers. And these princes of Issachar were with Barak, it seems. And they were involved in the close combat of the day that the foot soldiers were involved in. But yet we learn another thing in this 15th verse. And that is about Reuben, how that Reuben lacked. Reuben did not seem to assist. For verse 15 says, "For the divisions of Reuben, there were great thoughts of heart." Now Reuben was located, as you know, east of the Jordan River. They were a tribe that seemed to be far away, but for some reason they were certainly expecting Reuben to come to their assistance. And one reason may very well have been because in their previous oppression by the king of Mesopotamia and also by the king of Moab, they were one of the nations that were the very first to be overrun. They were one of the ones that would probably be oppressed the most because the army made its march right across the part of their territory. And so now that Israel was oppressed on another corner up in the northern area, they expected Reuben to come to their aid because they had no doubt gone to the aid of Reuben when Reuben was having so much oppression. But Reuben didn't come. And so he is mentioned here as having the divisions, for the divisions of Reuben were their great thoughts of heart. And the Bible scholars seem to interpret this to mean that Reuben was divided among themselves. The tribe couldn't decide what to do. Couldn't decide whether to enter into the conflict or not. Couldn't decide what their part should be. And so they were divided. They were not united in a oneness of purpose. And consequently, because of their division, they didn't come. Now, they were either divided over whether or not to enter into the battle. They were divided on whether or not the battle should even be fought, maybe. Maybe they were divided over what their loyalty was to the rest of the nation. And also, it is implied, too, that they were divided simply because they were on the other side of the Jordan River and divided off from the land. But there were great thoughts of heart. That is, the people who were expecting them to come and help, the rest of Israel, had a lot of thoughts about this. They wondered, why is Reuben like this? What is Reuben doing? What is Reuben thinking? What are the plans of this tribe of Reuben? All kinds of thoughts, all kinds of wonderment because of Reuben's instability. And of course, as we remember, when the blessing was given to Reuben, it was stated that Reuben would be unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. And this seems to be one of the times when Reuben is living up to this prophecy about this tribe. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. And today, whenever we hesitate to do what's right, whenever we become divided among ourselves, we're divided and not sure that this or that or the other should be done, it causes great thoughts of heart. People wonder about us. They may conjecture things about us. They may even make up things that are not true because of our hesitation. And another problem that Reuben had, not only were they divided, but they were overtaken with the affairs of this life and with the peace and security of their own things. For the 16th verse says, why abodest thou among the sheepfolds to hear the bleatings of the flocks? They loved to stay among the sheepfolds. They loved the quiet pastoral life of taking care of the sheep, which is well and good and nice. But when there is other work to be done that is being neglected, then you see, they are simply just thinking of themselves. They're thinking of the materialistic things. To say, well, we just can't let our sheep go. We can't turn loose. We can't go give you any help. Then, of course, this is selfishness. And this is greed. This is working after their own things and not seeking after the benefit of others. In the book of Philippians, the Apostle Paul is writing about a very similar thing when he says in the second chapter in the 21st verse, for all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's. So we can arrive at the point that we are so concerned about our own things and so little concerned about the things that have to do with the church and the benefit of others that we are a very selfish people and we're like these people of Reuben. We'd rather abide among our sheep flocks. We'd rather stay in an area of security and take care of our business than to help those in times of need. So he closes that 16th verse by saying, for the divisions of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. That seems to be all that this song wants to say about it. There were a lot of things thought, a lot of things maybe said, a lot of conjectures about it, and it was simply because Reuben was so muchly divided. Verse 17, Gilead abode beyond Jordan. Now that's all it said about Gilead. And this is referring to the tribe of Gad. Why Gad did not come to their assistance is not mentioned here. And really, the song doesn't seem to give too much of a condemnation. But it does name forever the fact that the tribe of Gad did not come to their assistance, did not aid. And certainly we would think that Gad should be just as muchly concerned about assisting, if not even more so than Reuben, because they were closer to the actual point of the battle. Then also we learn that other tribes did not assist. And why did Dan remain in ships? Dan seemed to imply that we have our ships to take care of. We have our business on the sea here. We just can't turn it loose. We have to stay with our ships. But we know Zebulun would have had the same excuse, because Zebulun was a tribe that had to do with the ships, but yet they were one of the ones in the very forefront of carrying this battle. So Dan is actually given a condemnation here. Why did Dan remain in ships? Asher continued on the seashore and abode in his breeches. That is, Asher decided that they needed to stay home and take care of their shoreline. They needed to take care of the little branches and streams that flowed into this shoreline. So they abode at home and took care of their own things. So we see here then that certain tribes did not assist, and they are given a condemnation for it. They are selfish, they are greedy, they're not wanting to come to the aid of their brethren. And among these then are Gilead, Dan, Asher, and Reuben. Verse 18, Zebulun and Naphtali were a people that jeoparded their lives unto the death in the high places of the field. Now these are the two tribes that bore the main brunt of the battle, Zebulun and Naphtali. They are the ones that sent some 10,000 volunteers. They are the bulk of Barak's army. Without their efforts, without their dedication, without their putting their lives in danger here, then there would have really been no true effective army. And so they're given credit for this. Zebulun and Naphtali, two tribes that seemed to be fairly insignificant tribes. They were not great leaders in things, but in this particular instance, they were in the forefront. And of course, the King Jabin was located in this area. They were closest to the oppression, and no doubt they bore more oppression than the other tribes did. But yet they were in the forefront when it came to the eradicating of this problem. We learn in verse 19 that there were others who came and assisted the enemy. The kings came and fought, and then fought the kings of Canaan in Tamach by the waters of Megiddo. They took no gain of money. Now, as we know, the Israelites did not have any kings at this time. They were a nation that were to have God as the king. And they weren't following him very faithfully, for if they had been, they could have had much, much more success. But they had no kings. But the other nations round about them each seemed to have a king. And so any other nation involved in this would be a king that would be involved. And so the kings came and fought. And this verse says they took no gain of money. That is, these kings had such an intense dislike of the Israelites. They had such a desire to see this king of Canaan succeed that they were not mercenaries. They didn't come to be paid. They came because their heart was in the battle. They wanted to fight. They had such a dislike of the Israelites, of the people of God, that they fought for nothing. They took no gain of money. And of course, we know this kind of a soldier is one that's going to really be the better soldier, because he's fighting because he really believes in what he's doing and not just for money, not just for a paycheck. We learn in verse 20, though, that there were other elements involved in this battle besides just the people. They fought from heaven. Now, this seems to imply that the forces of God in heaven were involved in the battle. That God used whatever resources he needed, things that would be considered to be heavenly things were in this battle. God was directing it from his home in heaven, of course. And he further explained this by saying the stars in their courses fought against Sisera. Sisera being the captain of Jabin, the king of Canaan. He was the main leader of their army. So the stars in their courses fought against Sisera. Now just how the stars did this, we're not told. There are many who think that there was a great upheaval of the weather and that the heavenly bodies might have had a real factor in that. We don't know just how this was, but even the stars were against the people that were enemies of God. And so we have to realize that when we're not on God's side, that we have all the elements of heaven against us. We have all the elements of earth against us. Even the stars in their courses are fighting against us. Then he mentions the river Kishron. The river of Kishron swept them away. That ancient river, that river Kishron. So even this river, which was a small, insignificant river, it arose probably as a result of rains and floods and the weather, and it swept them away. It entered into the battle also. God used this little river, that which is called there that ancient river. He used it for the very purpose of helping to defeat this great army. And then, O my soul, thou hast trodden down strength. Deborah's referring to herself here. Deborah entered into this battle too. Her soul helped to trod down the strength. Her soul helped to overcome the enemy. And so she contributed her part. So we see how this song then is praising God, but it's naming the elements that were involved in the battle, those that fought, those that refused to fight, and those that were enemies of God. So one way that praise and honor and glory is given to God is simply by telling the truth about a thing. Nobody is given a position of honor that didn't deserve it. And those that refuse to participate, it's told about them just like it happened. And all this goes to the praise and honor of God. Well, we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.